Thanks to Marion Williams, co-author of the book, It's a Metaphysical World, interesting tales from her, and very interesting calls from you. It's just you and me now from here on out. I'll take this break, go back to the phones, see what's on your mind. I'm George Knapp, in tonight for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. East of the Rockies, Stan in Indiana. Good morning, Stan. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just wanted to say it's great to talk to you, Mr. Knapp. I just had a dream, a incident a long time ago, about 1985. I was dating a lady who now is my wife, and she had a white IU sweater on the night we were out on a date. And at the end of that date, I started feeling bad, and I wanted to come home early. And every time I would cough, I started feeling really bad and really out of control, you know, like I was getting sick, but I didn't know what was causing it. And I told her everything, you know, well, you know, it'll be okay, this and that. Told her to go on home, and I'll talk to my mom, because at this time we were just dating. I said, I'll get with mom and see what's going on with myself, see if I'm sick, what I'm coming down with. And really didn't get to it, and kind of fell asleep. When I thought I was waking up, I looked in the corner, and coming toward me was something that was white. And I just thought, well, that's Kim. She's concerned about me. She's coming back to see me, just to make sure I'm okay before she leaves. And as she got a little closer to me, I felt this need to awaken, to stir myself. And I was fighting it. I was like, why are you fighting it? This is your girlfriend. She's just coming to check on you, make sure you're okay. But the closer she got, the urge became stronger. And suddenly I woke up, and I had the pillow and about two big heavy covers, and they were all on top of me, and they were all right on my face. And it was, if I hadn't had that little interlude with that what I now believe is an angel, I'm pretty sure I would have passed away from asphyxiation. And to this day, I tell her that story, and we've been married 22 years now. And she says, oh, you know, you're just, it's okay. No, that was definitely a metaphysical intervention.
So what you were seeing, this white, wasn't your pillow. It was a being, at least in this dream state, or you think it was literally there?
I think it was literally there, because it, as it came toward me, it wasn't a calming, like, you're okay. It was a, I'm here for something specific, to tell you one thing. And the closer she got, it aroused me. It awoke me. It stirred me. And like I said, when I came to, when my eyes opened, you know, all that stuff was on top of me. I guess I'd just been wrangling because I felt bad and got all that stuff around my head.
Does your wife find it sort of romantic when you tell her this thing now?
Well, it's come up so many times. It's just like, well, this may have happened. Yeah, I'm kind of believing now after all these years, and he hasn't quit talking about it. But yeah, it really did happen. So yeah, it kind of puts you together, because the whatever it is out there in the other world, on the other side, will put itself into something that you will recognize and will come straight into you and say, look, mister, it's now or never. You need to wake up, smell the coffee, or something's going to happen.
Stan, I appreciate you sharing that story. I think we've all had those moments where we're in some sort of a state of sleep, somewhere in between being asleep and awake, and trying to wake up, trying to get up, and can't quite do that. I appreciate that story, though. That's a good one. West of the Rockies, Jared in Fremont, California. Hi, Jared.
Hey, how you doing? First time caller, but I've been listening a long time. So I'm actually from out in Kenai, Alaska, originally. And we had a house out there when I was real little, probably 3 years old, and we used to have a poltergeist. And it sounds ridiculous, but our whole family accepted it. He used to throw around pots and pans, smash an ashtray next to my mom a couple of times. My dad's seen it before, and it was a real common thing for a while.
And look like what? What are you seeing?
He said that he saw just a vague figure standing behind the door when he woke up one night. He just kind of woke up with a weird feeling. He didn't believe it before that. He thought we were all full of crap, but he ended up waking up one night seeing it. Like I said, we have my mom cooks a lot. She'd have pies all over the counter, and just two of them would slide off in broad daylight in front of us, just slide off the counter onto the floor.
Did you get used to it?
Yeah. So yeah, we got real used to it. We actually called him George, was what we called him. And we used to say, "Hey, George, stop it." And that's when my dad woke up when he saw it in the corner. He looked up, and the first thing he saw was, "Hey, George, quit." And he said it, and it disappeared. So we all got real used to it. My dad always kind of still joked around about it. And we left that house real originally, actually. We called that the greenhouse. When we moved out of that house, we moved into the red house, which was an upgrade, nice two-story house. And my dad was joking around, "Oh, George, come on, get in the car. We're moving. Oh, George, this is your bedroom." Well, actually, that was my older sister's bedroom, and she was a real bookworm. She towered up her books in the middle of the floor. We went out for dinner on the first night we moved into the new house. We come back, and those books are spiraled on the middle of the floor in her room. And it was, I mean, it was bone-chilling. I was too young to really understand what was going on. I've heard a lot of the stories and things as I've grown up. Well, that was the last we heard of George, for God, until just recently. Mom always told me she was kind of into the spiritual realm a little bit. She always told me, whatever you do, whatever you experiment with, don't mess with a Ouija board. Terrible things come through that. Only evil spirits will come to you. Well, of course, we decided to mess around with it. Probably about 2 years ago, we sat down in a park, me and three other of my friends that I trust. They're still my best friends to this day. I trust them very dearly, intimately. Sat down, we figured we could trust each other not to mess with the cursor and to play around with the Ouija board a little bit. So we start out asking just a few trivial questions, things, you know, who are we going to get married to, and yada yada, just playing around. Well, it comes down to calling upon our guardian angels. We all believe we have our guardian angel that's helped us out through hard times, so we start calling on them. My three friends get through theirs, and it gets to me. So I say, "Guardian angel, who are you? What's your name?" And it spells out George. And I got chills right there. I hadn't told any of these friends about George. I hadn't talked to anybody about this. It was an inner family thing. And I'd never mentioned it to them before. So I thought, coincidence, one of them are pushing it around. I don't believe this anymore. So I asked, "When did I first meet you?" And it spells out greenhouse.
And this is not you doing it. You're not doing it, right?
No.
Not even
no,
subconsciously.
It,
no.
No, it's pulling my fingers. It's like I'm trying to. I'm freaking out, trying to hold it in place, trying to, because I think that they're messing with me or something. So I want to stop it and make it go the other direction or something, you know. And I can't. I couldn't move it. And then I still didn't fully believe it. And I said, "Where's the last place we saw you?" And it went to R, and it went to E, and I knew it was going to spell out Red House, and I just quit. I said bye and shoved it up to goodbye, and just, I mean, I started crying. I went home. I called my mom. And I don't know. I think I made him realize that I know that he's here, because now I have random occurrences. Me and a friend of mine, we're about to go to a movie, standing in the entryway of my house, having a perfectly normal conversation, and we both look over at the wall at the same time and break conversation entirely. It was totally uncharacteristic, and just look over at the wall, and the clock drops down. Like, it looked like it had been held at a 45-degree angle, like somebody was walking up trying to pick up the clock off the wall, but we looked over and caught it, and that was kind of the feel of it, like, oh, they caught me, and he dropped it. And
now,
I mean, Go ahead.
Continue.
It was just, and this friend of mine doesn't believe in anything paranormal. You could tell him, you could put a ghost in front of him and say, screw you. And he just looked at me and said, let's not talk about that. And we walked off.
Now, back when you were young and living in Alaska and this stuff first started, it seemed like a poltergeist, not a guardian angel, right? I mean, was there any kind of positive stuff that came out of it?
It was neutral. He was entirely, if you can imagine, a 10-year-old with a mischievous state of mind wandering around your house was the thing. He never hurt anybody. Nobody ever got hurt. But he definitely threw an ashtray across the room and smashed on the wall next to my mom's head. And she's got to clean it up. And it just, you can imagine him walking away and giggling. It was very, and I was talking to them. I mean, I guess you can have a unique kind of form of guardian angel, but he didn't poke his head until we started messing with the Ouija board. We hadn't heard from him in 15 years, 10 years. And now all of a sudden, another thing actually happened. This was very recently, about a month and a half ago. We had a bottle. We bought a really nasty bottle of gin. And we got about 3/4 of the way through it, and we just couldn't stomach it. So we put it up in the middle of the top of the fridge, which is real cluttered with, like, vitamin bottles and things around it. And I cook a lot. I have a little spot on the counter next to the fridge where I put all my vegetables when I cook soups. So I have a pile of vegetables there. I'm going back and forth, cutting board to the vegetables, cutting board. I walk back to the vegetables and reach to grab a head of cabbage. And right as I extend my hands out and I'm about to grab the cabbage, bottle of gin falls into my hands from the top of my view. It just think perfectly. Like, I could not have stood above someone and dropped it at the perfect time for it to fall into my hands just majestically. And a friend of mine was there, and he, as the bottle fell into my hands, he looked over, and his face just went white. He knew exactly, because you can see the empty spot on the top of the fridge where the bottle had been. There was no way for it to slide off in any direction. You know, it was like somebody lifted it up and just waited, and dropped it into my hands.
Have you or other members of your family been motivated to read up about poltergeists, spirits like that, because of the experiences you had when you were young and now as an adult?
I have trouble reading into it because there are so many untruthful people out there who are putting out stories to try to get attention on forums. People who say they know what they're talking about, that they're experts, and then I don't know where the right place to look on it is, and I don't know what good it's going to do. He's around. He doesn't hurt anybody. He just kind of pokes around. I don't know if he has some unfinished business here or something. I don't know why he's here.
For this thing to follow you for so long, over so many, such a an area, different homes, and for such a big chunk of your life, that seems really unusual to me. There are a lot of reports, of course, fairly reliable reports about poltergeist type beings in association with families that have children, but it seems like when the children grow up, it goes away. I don't think I've heard of hardly any stories where it follows you and again and again and sticks with you for so much of your life.
Yeah, he didn't. I'm 22 years old now. The last experience that we had with him, I was 4 years old before this recurred 2 years ago, so when I was 20. So there's a 16-year gap where we had no activity. I had some interesting experiences kind of growing up. Like, I was 14, and I had a streak of about 4 nights in a row where I would hear, laying in bed, right before I go to sleep, I'd hear the... You know when you're taking a shower and you don't push the thing down and the water doesn't drain out of the pipe?
Uh-huh.
That kind of gurgle splash real quick. Well, I'd hear that and then go into the bathroom and think, oh, man, Shasta, my little sister didn't put the thing down. Go in there and the tub's dry. And little quirky things like that. But like I said, my mom has messed around with the Wiccan religion a bit and plays with the tarot cards and things like that. But I just figure some strange energies get attracted. But George is a very concrete, I can almost imagine what he would look like because of his personality, the way that he does things and messes around. And like I said, with the clock on the wall, it was like you could feel the, oh, shit, they caught me. Oh, no.
Had you ever, you said your mom messed around with some of this stuff, tarot cards, etc. Had she done that before he appeared the first time, or was that sort of in a reaction to him being around?
No, she had done it before that. Actually, when he first showed up in our family, it was on a tape that my mom found up in the attic. She had been moving stuff and they hadn't put it away yet. Her and my dad had just gotten married. And she was going through boxes. Oh my gosh, totally forgot about this. She's going through boxes and is listening to this tape of her singing from when she was little. And on the tape, it kind of scratches out and goes to this voice of a like deep-throated man, saying, "I'm here now," something about getting you, and "I'm going to be with you now," or something along the lines. It wasn't nice. It wasn't nice at all, and it was very dark and threatening. And she kind of freaked out a little bit, played through the tape again, and there was nothing there. But my father was there with her at the time and heard it. But kind of, I think men have a way of doing that when you have something crazy happen or something out of the ordinary. You kind of just put it out of your mind, and after enough years, it just doesn't exist anymore.
Sure.
Think you heard it, or I don't know. But he put it out of his mind until he actually saw George. But that is the first occurrence when he showed up in the house, and then strange things started happening. We were down in the family room one time. It was a two-story house down in the family room, and there was a stairwell. And one of those lights that you can adjust the brightness of it, it's a little turn wheel. And we had that light turn on. It slowly went from dim until all the way up. And that takes a pretty precise kinetic movement to turn a light on like that. It's not just a flip switch or a circuit that goes weird, you know? That's a dedicated motion to turn one of those lights on, and that came on full blast.
Wow.
He's just weird. It's like he wants attention and wants everybody to know he's there. But I don't know. Actually, I don't know if you know any psychics or anything on the West Coast or anybody who would be willing to help me with an interaction. Just
Well,
like
let's
a sit
ask.
down.
You're in Fremont. Is that Bay Area?
Yes, absolutely. Over San Francisco and everything.
Well, let's ask people who might be listening. Any suggestions on who would be reliable for Jared and his family to talk to up in the Bay Area, Northern California, to help sort it out? I would think it would be driving you crazy that you would want to go to somebody, an academic or a university team or somebody who would be reliable to check this out. Because something that happens that often around you, I would think it would be irresistible to professional investigators.
I think so, but I mean, I guess I just haven't gotten around to it. It's so normal because I grew up with the idea of it being around that I didn't think it so far out of the ordinary. I thought other people have these kind of experiences all the time. They just don't talk about them, or I mean, I didn't talk about it for a long time until after the incident with the Ouija board. I hadn't told my friends about it at all, and these people were very, very close to me. And we'd had ghost talks and things like that, and I didn't even bring them up.
Jared, I really appreciate the call. Fascinating story. I think a lot of people in our audience would be envious of you for having this many experiences and these dramatic kinds of experiences. Appreciate the call. A lot of other folks on the phone lines. We'll get to other calls and stories. I'd like to hear your thoughts on the story that Jared just told us and any suggestions you might have about who he could talk to up in Northern California. Tom Petty with what could be the theme song for Coast to Coast, I Need to Know. Stay with us, everyone. We're going to have to go a ways to top Jared's story there, but the phone lines are full. A lot of folks want to share with us their experiences. Get right to your calls right after this. I'm George Knapp in for George Norrie tonight on Coast to Coast AM. We did have one suggestion for our caller, Jared, from Nick in the Bay Area. He suggests calling the Berkeley Psychic Institute. I don't know about them, but it might be worth a phone call at least. First-time caller, Scott in North Carolina. Good morning, Scott. How you doing?
Yes, sir. About a year ago, I was in bed. I couldn't sleep. I was listening to the radio, and all of a sudden, I just had a bad feeling, just a terrible feeling, sort of scary. And all of a sudden, it just felt like something was just holding me down, my whole body. And I remember I was trying to move my arms free, and I couldn't do it. And then it was just all of a sudden, bam. I was able to move again, and when I was, my arms flailed out where I was trying to move. And then the feeling came over me again, and once the feeling came over me, there was nothing I could do. And the same thing happened, and it happened two more times. And as soon as it ended the last time, I got up and I bolted out of the room. And it happened about 6 months later. And I just remember, once you get that feeling, there's nothing you can do. You can't move. You can't talk. You can't scream. You can't do anything.
You're not seeing anything, though.
No, not seeing a thing. You know, you can't even open your eyes. You can't move any of your muscles. You can't do anything.
Are you sure you're awake?
Yeah, I was awake because I was listening to the radio because I couldn't fall asleep that night. And I just remember getting that distinct feeling that something wasn't right. And once I got that feeling, there was nothing I could do. And it seems like once it let go of you, you know, you could move, but then it was just almost instantaneous. You got that feeling and it was right back. It was just like something was over your whole body holding you down. You could feel pressure and there was nothing you could do.
Do you get a sense of it being a sense of foreboding or evil, or that it was out to do you harm, or what?
It wasn't good, I can tell you that, because just the pressure I could feel on me. I mean, it wasn't positive in any way. You know, I don't necessarily know if it was evil or what it was, but it was not positive.
I wonder if there's anything else going on in your life that would invite this in, any kind of turmoil or psychic pain or bad things going on.
Not at the time that I can really think of, but I can just remember the old man I used to work with. He was about 80 years old, and he would tell me back when he was a kid, you know, he lived in an old cabin. He said it was, you know, about 50 years old when he was a kid. And he was in the upstairs, and he said he could hear something coming up the steps. And once he could hear it coming up the steps, it was the same exact thing. Once he could hear it, there was nothing he could do. And it was the same exact thing. And, you know, I just don't know exactly what that could have been or what it is or anything. But it's just the most scary, terrifying feeling that you will ever feel, having no control at all.
Well, I can tell you that it's not uncommon that a lot of people have reported those kinds of experiences. The skeptics, the people that want this stuff to go away, would say it's some form of sleep paralysis, that you're not really awake, that you just think you're awake and it's a dream or something. But there are some pretty dramatic cases that have been investigated, including in the alien area, associated with abduction type experiences that sure seem real, and they certainly seem more than real to the people to whom it's happening. I wish I could give you some advice about it, but maybe some of our other callers, if this sounds familiar, can share their experiences and how they get over it. Are you able to think and make it go away, or it just goes away when it feels like it?
It just goes away when it feels like it, because once it takes control, there's nothing you can do. You just pretty much have to sit there and wait for it to go away.
Are you a religious guy, Scott? Are you a Christian or religious at all?
I'm a Christian, but I don't go to church or anything like that.
I was just wondering if you had a pastor you could talk to about it, or has it happened anything like this to anybody else in your family?
Not that I know of. I just know the room that it happened in, the room has always been sort of like an eerie feeling in that room. It always stays cold in that room. And I just remember when I was little, you know, things always would happen in that room. You know, as far as, you know, doorknobs twisting when I was real little, you know, even my mama telling me, you know, that just mysterious things would happen in that room and on that side of the house always.
What do you think it is?
I have no clue. I have no clue. I mean, I just wish I knew. You know, maybe some of the other callers, like you said, can comment, and, you know, if they had some experiences like that, maybe they can share it and we can figure this thing out.
All right, let's find out. I appreciate the call, Scott. I know it's not easy to admit those kind of experiences to a couple of million people listening on the radio. Thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, Buck in Oregon. Hi, Buck.
George, how you doing?
Okay.
I'd like to talk about the zero-point energy field.
Okay.
When I was young, I was always in the UFO environment. My great-great-uncle was Pappy Henderson, so, you know, I heard about Roswell and all that stuff ever since I was little.
No kidding.
So the zero-point energy field always fascinated me. Tesla, Dr. Morey, and more recently, Mr. Richard Klemm out of Texas. Back in 1978, unfortunately, he passed away. Now, he had what I call hydrosonic molecular acceleration, and we don't have to use internal combustion engines anymore. And I'm just tired of, you know, us fighting for oil when we don't need to. I just wish we could get this technology out on the market.
I don't know if it's there yet or not. I have a friend of mine. His name is Dr. Hal Puthoff, a physicist of some renown who is also in Austin, Texas, at something called the Institute for Advanced Studies. His specialty is zero-point energy. He's been working on it a long time. I suspect one of these days we're going to hear about him winning the Nobel Prize for Physics. But although he's pretty close, I think, I don't think that we're quite to the point where we can harness it. But that's just based on what I know.
Well, my point is I have succeeded. Currently, I'm stage 4 prostate cancer and dying. And I've been trying to get this information out to the world. I was kind of hoping that the Coast people could help me out, you know, the Coast audience and you guys. I don't know what I can say over the air to, you know, other websites and stuff. Is YouTube okay?
Sure, I guess so.
Okay, if the Coast listeners go to YouTube and just type in my name, Buck Henderson, or Help Stop the Wars for Oil, there's information there about hydrosonic molecular acceleration. It's what Klemm was doing back in the 70s. I've been researching it for 30 years, and it's amazing, and we can do this. We don't need internal combustion engines anymore. This technology can go so big, we can travel in space with it. I really would like to talk to this guy in Texas and get more information to him. You know, I'm kind of nervous. I don't know what to say.
Well, but tell me this. How does it work? I mean, can you give us a thumbnail sketch so that we would understand it?
Sure. I can tell you how it works, basically, without violating any patent issues that I have going here. But basically, when you take a molecule and you accelerate it, okay? Now, remember, everything isn't static. Everything's in motion at all times, okay? Now, when you take that molecule and you accelerate it, as you accelerate it going towards the speed of light, E equals mc squared, you reach energy, correct? Well, during different phases of that acceleration, it excites the zero-point energy field, which it is part of, at which point you can draw from that energy. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I've been able to do that in a fluid.
Well, how do you do it? What do you use? You have a particle accelerator at home?
Yes, I do. Actually, if you go to that, if the listeners go to YouTube and look at that YouTube thing, they'll see the device itself. There, I do have a model of it up in the background. And you can go to Marsupial Motors. I mean, that's my Facebook page. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of ways I can get this information to people. It's fascinating. Klemm's device went over 103 miles an hour in the car that he had. And unfortunately, he passed away. Now, mine looks very similar to his, and I know exactly what he was doing. Now, how he was doing it was he was accelerating a fluid inside a mass, right? And when he was doing that, he was creating an environment that excites a zero-point energy field. And by doing so, that motion that he was grabbing and that extra energy through inertia values can be collected in rotational value, I guess is the best way to describe it.
I'll I'll tell you what, Buck, I'm not a physicist, but I will, after the program, I'll look at that on YouTube, and I'll send a note to my friend, Dr. Putoff, and get his opinion about it. I have one other question for you, sure. Though. Pappy Henderson was your uncle?
My dad's uncle, yes.
And what did he tell you about Roswell?
Well, what he told me about Roswell was it wasn't our aircraft. The aircraft was real. The writings on the metals were not of any language of this planet. The metal was, you had a piece of the metal for a while. The metal you could crumble up and it'd retake, you know, it had a memory. It'd go back to the shape that it was. Now, in my experience, I think that they grew the skins, and the skins actually have a harmonic frequency that's in relation to gravity, and that's how they fly so fast through our atmosphere. That's just me.
but this guy was pretty open in telling members of the family about it. I mean, the story that we've all read is that he's the one that flew the plane that carried the wreckage, right?
Correct. He was the pilot. He also flew in one of the bombs in Japan. But anyways, the thing was, he didn't talk about it until he was diagnosed with cancer and was dying, at which point in time he said, okay, they can't kill me now. And I'm in the same boat. You know, I've got my year. My doctors say I got about a year, and I need to get this motor to the market. But the point I'm trying to get at is, once he was at the point where the government couldn't do anything to him, he was openly talked about it.
Well, he's considered to be one of the most credible witnesses in that whole Roswell story. And there are, you know, some good ones and some bad ones. And he's one of the good ones, that's for sure.
Right. Buck, and Sappho, his wife, she's still alive in Hawaii. And she definitely did some interviews. And she got, you know, most of the information from him. So, you know, I believe her all the way.
Buck, I appreciate the call. I'll look at your stuff later after the program. I'll send it on to my friend, and I regret hearing about your health problems. I hope you hang in there. Thanks for the call. East of the Rockies, John in Pennsylvania. Hi, John.
Yes, hello, George.
What's on your mind?
I had listened earlier, and I couldn't get through until just recently about I had an experience, I believe it was an angel. And I just wanted to share that.
Okay.
I'm going back to 1999. And can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Where are you when this happens?
Actually, it was March of 1999 in Miami, Florida. And I had gone down there with a friend, and we stayed in Miami Beach, and we were there for several weeks. It was a very offhanded flight of fancy on my part. I probably shouldn't have done it. But anyway, at the point, I really didn't care too much about things. And after a few weeks, my friend left me for a woman. And anyway, so I was totally alone. I had no place for to go. I was out of money. And so I just took a bus from Miami Beach up to Miami, and I got the bus. I said to the driver, is this the center? And he said, well, this is a park here. Get off here, and you'll find something. I said, okay. Now, I looked pretty good, and I had a nice big piece of luggage on rollers. And I got off the bus. I started walking through this little park, and there's a fella coming towards me, a medium build, medium height. Dark hair, and he's carrying two flag poles, and they had on the ends they had like these sharp pointed things, they had little banners on them, and he says, "I can kill right now." And I looked at him. He said, "I could kill you right now. I could put this right through you." And I thought, "Well, okay." And I didn't care. And he said that. He said, oh, you don't care. I said, no, I just can't be bothered with this. So he said, oh, I will not do that. And he just walked past me, and he just kind of abreasted me, and he said, I'll see you soon. I said, okay, fine. So
you're thinking this is just some street person or what?
Well, he was quite clean, and he was nice-looking man, and looked like to be in his 40s, and I really didn't think much about it at all. I thought, well, you know, there's something wrong with the guy. He's kooky. That's, you know, and I'm glad he decided not to kill me. But I was kind of much in the mood that I didn't really care anyway. Because I had nothing. I didn't have no idea what I was going to do. I knew nobody down in that area. And so I'm walking and I'm walking and I'm, anyway, and I went over, as I remember it, I guess it's a bay or something like that. I guess from one part of Miami to another. Oh, and it was, I walked for a couple of hours and got over into this other part. And I realized that, oh, I'm in the place they, I guess they called Little Havana, with all Hispanic Cuban people. And I thought, well, okay, fine, whatever. And I'm walking around the streets and I had no idea what I was doing. And I'd asked a police patrolman, I said, you know, I told my situation. He said, well, you probably want to go to the mission, you know, the shelter. And I said, well, where is that? He said, oh, you're pretty far away from it, buddy. He said, I said, can you give me a ride? He said, no, I'm not going to do that. And he chuckled and off he went. Anyway, I'm walking around and I hear this voice. I'm going past this wall. And this voice says, see, I told you I'd see you. And I look up on the top of this wall, and here's this man laying up there on this wall. And I said, the same guy. I'm looking at him. He said, you need something to eat. You haven't eaten. You need you must be thirsty. You must be dying. And I said, well, yeah, I am. And, now, I had been a private investigator for many years. I'm 69 years old now. And so I was not a trusting person. I was not trusting at all. Anyway, and it was really strange. Here I am. I'm dressed up in my nice Tahitian shirt and my shorts and my luggage. I'm rolling. And he says, oh, come on. Come with me. And I just went with him. And we walked only maybe another block. And we went into an apartment building that was obviously quite old. It was beautiful. We went inside. It was marble floors. And I thought, wow.
Hey, John, that music from the Allman Brothers tells us we need to take a break. We'll come back. Hey, hang on. We'll continue the conversation because I want to get to the part where you tell me why you think he's an angel. We continue our conversation with John. A lot of folks on the phones. Stay with us, everyone. I'm George Knapp in tonight for George Norrie here on Coast to Coast AM.